Now, we're always being told that size doesn't matter, but it does to a nanoscientist. And Ben Valsler met up with Michael Saylor to find out how he's exploiting the power of the very tiny.
So we work on nanomaterials, primarily silicon or iron oxide-based materials. So these are devices or materials that are so small they often can't be seen by the human eye, or they just look like little specks. And they have structures inside them that are built at the nanoscale.
So when we say nanoscale, I know this is really quite a cliche now, but how big would these be in comparison to a human hair?
Yeah, so about 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. The real challenge with nanotechnology is to build a very sophisticated structure into a small space. The reason you want to make the small space for environmental sensing is because those smaller spaces allow you to do things that you can't do with bigger things. For example, we make sensors that can go in the body that have to be small enough to fit inside a needle. For environmental sensing, you really don't need to have something quite that small. And typically the materials we work with at the environmental sensing area are large enough to see, maybe the size of a coin, but they contain a nanostructure. For example, we make these chips that have very small nanopores in them. And these very small pores kind of suck up molecules very effectively. It's a phenomenon known as microcapillary condensation, is that if you have a very small pore, typically on the order of about a nanometer, then vapors will spontaneously condense in those pores. And so it's a means of concentrating the gas that you're trying to sense.
Once you have been able to concentrate it, how can you tell what you have there?
These are little silicon-based chips, so each one of these is about the size of a coin. And you can see that they have a very pretty color to them, intense green, blue, or red colors. The colors derive from the nanostructure. What's more is that color will change. So I've got a little bottle of ethanol here. If I put a drop on this chip, you'll see the color will change from green to red.
It has immediately changed. This is just what looks like a glass microscope slide, but it immediately changed in response to ethanol. Now, is it possible to get rid of the ethanol and use that slide again?
As you look at it, you'll see the ethanol evaporate away and it'll come back. So it's a reversible sensor. And the really cool thing about this is that the material is changing color from green to red. And so the gas or the toxin, when it gets into the chip, is giving you a red color. Red means stop and green means go. And so it has a very simple mnemonic feature to it. Why is that? The reason that it has a color is because of its nanostructure. And so if we didn't have that nanostructure there, everything here would look white. It would just be clear, and you wouldn't be able to tell that there was a chemical there. So that's really one of the advantages of having a nanostructure, building the nanostructure this way, is that it allows us to get a much more high-fidelity measurement. For example, if this ethanol were spilled on the table, you'd be able to smell it, but let's say you were at a distance and you didn't want to be smelling it. How would you tell whether that's ethanol or water? If we put a water drop on that chip, it won't change color at all. So the chemistry inside this chip also has an ability to distinguish between those two molecules.
And it gives you an immediate answer as well. It tells you immediately that there is ethanol present. In fact, the ethanol must have all evaporated by now because that's gone back to being a vivid green.
Yeah.
Now, what sort of limitations do we have? What can we actually use these sensors to detect?
Well, we do a lot of work in biological sensing and chemical sensing. So what tricks can you play with this nanostructure to cause the color to change when it only sees something like sarin gas? That's the nerve agent that was used in the Tokyo subway bombing. It's a kind of terrorist weapon of the day. So how do you detect a nerve agent? Or how do you detect whether it's an anthrax spore or it's an Ebola virus? What you need to use is some kind of chemistry or biochemistry to get you that specificity. So, for example, in the case of these chips, to make a biosensor out of them, one of the common tricks we'll play is we'll place an antibody inside the pores. And this antibody may be very specific for certain kinds of molecules. For example, we've got a system we're developing for cholera toxin, where we could detect cholera in drinking water based on putting an antibody in the pores that specifically binds just to that toxin and to nothing else. If we're looking for gas phase molecules, we play other tricks. So, for example, the sarin detector that I mentioned, to detect that kind of chemical, we place a specific catalyst in the pores, a copper-based catalyst, that will react fairly specifically with the sarin and create products that react very uniquely with the structure and cause a color change that we can detect.
Michael Saylor from UCSD talking to Ben Valsler.